KLAS 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported JAZZ 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th of July, Anno Domini 2011, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we got news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. We're going to have some fun. We will start.
That doesn't rhyme.
I know.
Fun?
Yeah.
Well, I could have called it Foos, but that wouldn't have meant anything to anybody.
Wouldn't have fit. That wouldn't have fit either.
Okay, Facebook has been advertising a something awesome event, and on Wednesday they actually maybe possibly delivered. The event included the introduction of video calling with Skype, group chat, and a redesign for Facebook chat. Video calling will bring Skype right into the Facebook interface, while group chat will allow users to chat without having to set up an actual Facebook group, according to CEO Mark Zuckerberg during the press event at the company's Silicon Valley headquarters. The chat revamp, meanwhile, is intended to provide users with easier access to friends who are online. With video calling, users can leverage Skype to contact friends right from Facebook.com. It rolled out Wednesday, and Facebook promised to access it in as little as two clicks. It's not yet available on mobile. Skype CEO Tony Bates made an appearance and said the company has been working on the Skype integration for about 6 months. He did not seem concerned that this would draw traffic away from Skype's main service. Skype had a goal of 1 billion users. This helps us get there, Bates said. We want to be as ubiquitous as possible. Skype, of course, is in the midst of being acquired by Microsoft, which has a long-standing partnership with Facebook. Zuckerberg said Skype's ties to Microsoft gives us the sense of stability and the knowledge that Skype is a company Facebook can trust. With group chat, meanwhile, users can add friends to a discussion by clicking Add Friends to Chat. Facebook decided to revamp the chat list, a chat window, to make it easier for people to find each other online. The updated window will look more like a buddy list, and the sidebar will display the people with whom you message most. One thing that's been surprising is how hard it is to find people who are online, Zuckerberg said. We just figured if we can make it so that people who have the screen width to run normal Facebook and have a buddy list, that can be very powerful. Given that the update is intended for larger screens, the new chat window will also not be available on mobile. Group chat, however, will work on your phone. Zuckerberg also confirmed that Facebook now has 750 million users, but said the site didn't report it because we don't think it's the metric to watch right now. My favorite part of that whole announcement was the very first question he took. The guy says, what do you think of Google Plus? He kind of blew the question up. But anyway, our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Skype in Facebook? And your choices are, sounds like a winner to me. I might try it. I prefer Google Plus Hangouts. And if only I had a friend to call. And so far, we've got 42 votes. Most of you are friendless, followed by Google Hangouts. But I know you'll have more to say. So when you're done with that, check the yellow box underneath the poll and click on the box. Give us your opinion. It will take you to another website where you can enter your opinion on what's going on there. And, of course, that's our question to you. What do you think about Skype inside Facebook? Have you tried it yet? What do you think?
I like.
Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I like the founder of MySpace came out and said, well, we had video chatting in 2004. And then so that I looked up, well, See You, See Me came out in 1994. So,
yes.
So, yeah, we're pushing 20 years since we've had video calling on the Internet.
And it's been a lot of people have not used it. Back in the day, unfortunately, you had to have a fairly hefty
powerful machine, comparatively. Yeah.
Now, of course, pretty much any machine will do it. That's not the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the day, you really needed a fairly hefty little box to be able to do that stuff.
Speaking of hefty boxes, Nick, and this is one thing I've noticed over the past few weeks, we've had a number of clients come through And, you know, the machines, granted, they're only maybe 5-6 years old. But what's happening is, you know, they're doing the updates, you know, and they're going to, like, the different Internet Explorers in this program and that program. And then they start saying, well, you know what? My machine is getting awful slow. You know, and you clean it up as much as you can. But the thing that it is, folks, and this is what you got to understand, the apps and everything else that you're, you know, installing and updating now because they're newer, assume, oh, you have a more powerful machine. Even though your machine is still 5-6 years old,
yeah,
and, you know, there's not much more you can do to that, it will slow it down, and there's nothing you can do other than just get another machine because the software just keeps thinking, oh, you don't have that old machine. You've replaced it.
It's assumed you have 4 gigs of RAM and a terabyte hard drive, and so it doesn't matter.
At least a dual, if not quad-core processor.
It doesn't matter if it downloads this
and a 1 gig
file.
And a 1 gig video card.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
You know, everything is super fast and everything else. You're running 64-bit, and, you know, when it comes to that, I can't do anything for it.
It's always interesting to look at the minimum recommendations on a, mm-hmm. on a program versus minimum requirements versus recommended requirements. And, you know, minimum, it'll run on a 46 with 256 megs of RAM. Recommended, you know, quad-core with 6 terabytes of hard drive.
Exactly.
Well, it's like I tell folks the analogy. I'll tell them, yeah, I can get on the thruway, and, you know, and I can do, you know, 35 miles an hour. I'll still get there, but versus doing, you know, this legal speed limit, say, 65, you know, and get there a little bit faster, you know, it's still going to do the job. So those old machines are doing the job. It's just, how fast you want to sit there and wait? Do you have the patience of a saint, or, you know, do you want to put your fist through the screen?
Yep. Yeah. And I'm finding that with a couple of things. I've been using Google Plus a lot. Actually, a lot more than either Facebook or Twitter.
Well, see, that's the only thing. It's another thing you got to check every day. You got to check your Google Plus, your Facebook, your Twitter.
Well, but now I'm thinking,
what is
how a Facebook is that?
Yeah. So You need somebody's got to come out with an aggregator that puts them all together.
Wait a minute. What's,
there's no API yet.
What's Google Plus?
Google Plus is Google's new social networking site.
Oh, okay. Sort of like Facebook.
It's like Facebook. Okay. There are some differences. One of the things that I really, really, really like is I can put people into what they call circles.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, I can have a soundbite circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I can have a friend circle. And I can have a family circle.
You can have real friends. You know, Facebook kind of blew it a little bit when they had just friends, meaning anyone you happen to click on.
Exactly. Exactly. Whereas I can put people in acquaintances. I can put them in NFC, which stands for No Faint Clue. I don't have any idea who those people are. But, you know, and we all have those. We have people who you look at their posts and you think, oh, this is somebody interesting. I'm interested in what they have to say, but I don't know who they are. So they go in there.
And you can make your own circles.
And you make your own circles. And so what I've done is now, if I want to, I can, for example, post something that only my family and friends can see.
Yep.
Okay.
You know, so instead of everything being public, mm-hmm. I can close things down to the group I want.
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of people that have had to repurpose their Facebook account.
Mm-hmm.
For general acquaintances and make a completely separate account for their family and friends that they want to separate
now,
posts
you don't have
to.
Yeah.
One thing I've hated that Facebook just did, they changed, you know, that chat window where you can see who's on to talk to them if you want to. They changed it. They made it one long bar.
Yeah.
Well, they added that for the Facebook video. So now
it's
you can easily chat with someone on
video.
Well,
what I really like
is
Google Plus calls their video chatting Hangouts, and you can chat with up to 10 people, well, 9 other people at a time.
Okay.
At a time. And it really works. And the very best part about
mm-hmm.
it, if I've got 9 people below my picture,
mm-hmm.
when we talk to each other, whoever's talking, their picture automatically pops up to the big window.
Oh, cool.
So you can always see who's talking, and mm-hmm. people just have to be a little polite to each other. So there are a lot of people I will never hang out with. They also have something called Huddle, which is group chat, which is the same thing that Facebook has now come out with. It works on your phone, and it works in the browser. And you can, again, chat with your circles. So if, for example, the other day I had a meeting with some of my tech people,
mm-hmm.
and we all got on and had a face-to-face video chat without us having to come together or even be in the same building.
Oh, okay.
So that was really,
that's
really
handy,
nice. Yeah. And and I've video chatted with family, and I've video chatted with friends, and I've, you know, and I can separate all of that much more easily in Google Plus than I can in Facebook.
All right, because yeah, I'm still getting used to a lot of the apps, and that is one of my major issues. Freaking Angry Birds.
Yeah, well, you, yeah, I know you spend.
That is addicting.
Yeah, it is.
But you know, learning the other apps that
the trick on Angry Birds is to buy Angry Birds seasons, because they keep coming out with new levels all the time. We just had the Easter season, and there's more seasons all the time. So you keep getting new content without paying anything more.
I'm getting enough. It's consuming enough battery and time of mine right now. But no, just the other apps that I'm finding out there that are very handy, and just. You know, like I say, even just my calendar, keeping stuff in the doing it on my actual computer screen, updating my calendar there in Gmail and my contacts and that type of stuff. It's a lot easier doing it on a full-size keyboard, getting it all, and then it reminds me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like my granddaughter's birthday, which was just Thursday, it already reminded me ahead of time, so I got the card out. Grandpa was in good standings there.
Exactly.
So, you know, all these other things.
The one thing I don't like is about Google Plus is that Hangouts, which is the video chatting, doesn't work on the tablets or the phone yet.
Yet. I was going to say, probably just got to wait for the app to come out and be written for that.
I only have two friends on my Google Plus.
Your wife and your son?
I just signed up this morning. You're one of them.
Oh, thank you.
And it goes on for pages and pages and pages. I gave up reading Facebook because it just goes on forever.
But what's nice is once you put people into, for example, here's my stream. That's your stream. Yeah. It's everybody. Yep. It's essentially Facebook.
Yeah.
But I can say, oh, I just want to look at my, for example, I can go pick up, I want to just look at the Googlers.
Isn't that, excuse me, just for, is it like sort of like the Android has friend stream? I saw an app there that's Friendstream.
Kind of.
What is Friendstream?
That's just an app somebody put together to do Facebook and Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Like I said,
I'm learning about all these, staying up too late and looking at this one and that one, and oh, this is cool. And the one that I'm discouraged in that hasn't been able to get to work is that key fob one. You know, I put all my key fob things
in there.
And I've tried it at Rite Aid and a few of the others. And it doesn't want to scan. Of course, I got the screen protector on it, but that shouldn't stop it.
It shouldn't stop it. I don't know why.
It's not reading them.
I've not played enough with that.
If anybody out there has an app that works with the Android better than this one that I've got, it's called Keyring. It works a little bit better.
So, see, once you put people into circles,
right?
You can just look at those circles.
Well, the two people I have are in my friends, and so this is just two people scrolling.
Well, but you're seeing
forever,
everything.
Everything those two people have written.
I'm afraid I'm fairly prolific.
Yes.
I will admit that. I've got several groups, and so I see different people in different groups. So when I'm at work, I just look at the RIT group.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Which makes sense.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's actually fairly easy to handle. So yeah, that's what I like about it. I really do like it. So far, I like it better than I like Facebook because I have better control over it.
See, I got family members. I don't do a heck of a lot in Facebook.
I still go back to Facebook because there are people I deal with that are only in Facebook. But I find that the amount of control I have in Google Plus, for me, is a better deal.
Well, like I say, you know, it's a way for me to stay in touch with some other folks. They'll see me pop on, and I've had some folks, and I'll say it right here publicly on the radio. You know, sometimes I'll say, well, you didn't answer me. Well, yeah, the thing of it is when I open up my browser, I can have like 37 tabs open up.
Yep.
One of them is Facebook, so it registers that I'm on.
Right.
I might be on, but that I'm not on that particular tab. I could be doing, you know, one of my distributors or one of the other. But yeah, I can have up to 37 tabs. I counted it one time. Open. If I open up a particular group, and I like that because of having the big screen, you know, the two screens side by side, I can sit there and, you know, toggle between so much stuff. It's just handy.
Yeah.
I read an interesting article, and I'm trying to think now. Over the years, branding yourself with your own domain name versus using whatever the service of the moment is. So, you know, asknick.com versus AOL/AskNick.
Right.
Versus MySpace, versus Facebook, versus Google. And every service dies after, you know, a few years, and you'd have been better off with your own domain name.
Yeah, there's no question to that. Oh. But the funny thing here is that Tom Anderson, your friend Tom at MySpace, is actually here.
Yep.
So is Mark Zuckerberg. He's got the most followers on Google Plus.
Yep. There was a quote from him saying he's surprised people are surprised he's on it.
Of course he'd be on it. Yeah. If I were a rival to Google, if this were a rival to what I do for a living, I'd be on it too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That, speaking of different web address, just registered with Jerry Stewart from CLSS. We know, matter of fact, we're going to be switching stuff over. Dan's redesigning it. And right, DearyPC.com.
You're
going to be setting that up.
Did you get all the misspellings of Deary?
No.
That is a problem.
You should register all the misspellings.
No. I could go broke. But
because I'm going to not get there. Even though I know it's spelled weird, I'm still not going to get there.
D-E-I-U-R-E.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I had to have Harry Legg redo our answering machine for the shop. And he gets, you know, I texted him, you know, or emailed him with all the information and what I wanted. Not a minute after I sent the email, the phone rings. How do you pronounce that name? Is that French?
Is it?
That was something interesting. We've been watching How the States Got Their Shapes on History Channel, and they had one last night on the different cultural influences and all of the French and the Spanish and the British, how they originally carved up pieces of America. The correct pronunciation of Detroit is Detroit.
Right.
Founded by the French. And all of the up and down the Mississippi, St. Louis, New Orleans. All the different French towns up and down. Next week they're doing one on accents, different regional accents, and how they got that way.
Nice. Should we wait until... Yeah, we'll wait. All right. I suspect right now. Yes, we're going to take a break, so if you're on the phone, please stay on the phone. We'll get to you right after the break. If you're not on the phone, I don't know why not. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. For Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. Back in just a couple of minutes with sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And we have Dar from Toronto, Ontario, Canada on the line. Welcome, Dar. What's your question?
I'll do, gentlemen. Well, the good news and the bad news about smartphones. We can lock them, but Mike Halsey, MVP,
right?
He says, could your smartphone contribute to your death?
To your death?
Yeah, like curtains.
Yeah.
How?
Because smartphones lock ICE, in brackets, in case of emergency numbers.
Right.
So how do you get around that?
Usually, even when it's locked out or no contract, you can still dial the 911.
Yeah,
but he's, again, your nearest and dearest. That's what he's addressing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, but here's the thing, Dar. If you've been locked out for some reason, like you didn't pay your bill, that's like voluntarily saying, I don't want a smartphone.
Not locked out by the providers, but locked out because you put a password.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, yes, and very few people do that, but it is absolutely possible.
That was a hole they found in the iPhone a couple of years ago, that even on the lock screen, you can still dial 911, and they figured out how to get into the dialing pad for 911 and then cancel the dial, and then it got you back to the main screen bypassing your password lock. They've since fixed that hole, but...
Right. But you're right. It could happen, Dar.
You're more likely, and there have been cities that have threatened to ban smartphones and iPods. You're more likely to walk into traffic while you're staring at the screen.
Oh, and the people I know who texted... I almost got killed on the expressway last week. Some woman, some young girl who was looking at her phone, so she was clearly texting, comes across three lanes of traffic to take an exit. Unfortunately for her, I was in that third lane. in a very large car that she just simply didn't see. Her friend in the passenger seat is screaming at her.
Oh, Jesus.
Finally bashed the phone out of her hand. She looked up and just barely missed me. I'm laying on the horn trying to pull over into the onto the shoulder.
Oh, I had one.
Wait a minute. Let's finish. I shouldn't have got off track. I apologize. So you're right, Dari. It is absolutely possible that that could happen. You're entirely correct. That's, you know, one of the reasons that a lot of people don't put password on their phones. They just use whatever the swipey bit is.
Safer.
You've got a real, you got to make a trade-off there. It's risk management. Do you risk losing your phone and somebody gets all your stuff? Or do you lock it and risk locking yourself out at an inopportune moment?
Well, one last thing about Google Chrome extensions.
Yeah.
You can actually get an extension to let you to notify you of new Google extensions.
Oh, nice.
Cool. Did you not?
Cool. That works.
It's on troublefixers.com. How to find new useful Google Chrome extension.
That's very funny. A kind of a meta extension. Thanks, Dar.
Cheers. Bye.
Similar experience to me just this past week. I'm getting off, headed back to the shop. So I come down the expressway, and there I'm sitting on Empire because it's two lanes to turn left. The light turns green for me, and I just hesitated. Sure enough, this girl on a cell phone just comes buzzing right on through. The guy over on the right of me who was swinging around laid on the horn. This girl did not even move her head. She was just so focused talking on the phone. And I stopped. He turned. We looked at each other and just kind of shrugged her shoulders.
What are you
gonna like,
do?
That girl didn't even realize that she was just literally that close from getting T-boned.
Yep.
I mean, like I posted on my Facebook, I put up there, the poster over the 4th. Is a text worth dying over?
Exactly.
And there have been so many kids recently that have died while texting.
Yeah, and it just gets worse. So all of those of you out there listening, do not text and drive. I cannot imagine a text that's more important than your life.
There's even some texting and driving is already illegal. But there's already some communities that have banned too many teenagers in the same car because they distract each other, distract the driver, and then cause accidents.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
I certainly remember incidents similar to that in my youth. Who doesn't?
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Bodan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's your question?
Welcome, gentlemen. I'd like to continue the Google Plus conversation for a minute. Actually,
sure.
I'm reading an article from the Washington Post this morning about professional photographers. And basically it says the dangers of Google Plus have not been fully explored. And professional photographers, people should be worried about losing their rights. By submitting, posting, or displaying the content, you give Google a perpetual, irrevocable, worldwide, royalty-free, and non-exclusive license to reproduce, adapt, modify, translate, publish, publicly perform, publicly display, and distribute any content which you submit, post, or display on or through the service.
I don't know that's the current one.
I believe it is. Well, that's what the Washington Post has on their article.
Maybe. I know it used to say that, and then they made a bunch of changes.
Here's one from July 6th. Let me read this. That's been an issue with virtually every website, especially the
TwitPic.
Actually, this is July
TwitPic
the 8th.
The photo sharing.
Is even more obnoxious.
Yeah, here's one from PhotoFocus.
It might well be.
Yeah, google.com/account/TOS. So basically anything you put on the internet can be used by them anytime they want.
If you're a professional photographer or someone who makes a living off of photography by posting it thinking that you're going to share a picture, well, you may have given up your right and someone else could benefit.
Yeah.
Well, that's if you post it in Picasa, right? I mean, if you post it on your own site, they don't have that right.
Correct, but we're talking about Google Plus. It's the conversation.
In Google Plus, yeah. And that's what's interesting is there have been cases on, what's the other one, Flickr. There was a big case a few years ago where, who was it, Virgin Mobile Australia had an advertising sign, and they got a picture of a dumpy kid and said, don't be like this girl, get one of our phones. And someone who knew the kid found out about it and told the parents, and the picture was pulled out of Flickr. The photographer had forgotten to put a non-commercial license on it. He just had attribution license. And so if you look at the bottom of the picture, it was attributed to the photographer. And it was this big mess. You know, who's to blame? You know, can the parents sue Virgin Mobile? And no, because the photographer made the mistake.
Yep.
Hey, listen, I know you guys did talk about Firefox version 5, which I just upgraded from my 3.whatever to 5 this morning.
Mm-hmm.
You guys satisfied with it? Are there any issues I should be aware of?
No, for the most part, at least they got rid of 4 and corrected, you know, a lot of the issues that were going on with that. So, no, 5 seems to be very stable, and again, it's customizable. So folks, you know, want to be with 5 and still have the look of, say, 3, you can do it. You got to do a little digging, and you know, but you can still have it look and feel like version 3 if that's what you're comfortable with.
Okay. All right. I know that there were issues with 4. That's why I did not.
Yes. No, 4 was having a lot of issues with a lot of other programs working with it and everything else, and it was just they couldn't get it off fast enough.
All right, gentlemen, enjoy your salubrious Saturday.
Thank you, sir. And same to you. Be safe.
Bye-bye.
And what's kind of interesting is Mozilla has withdrawn support for Firefox 4 in favor of 5, but they're still supporting 3.6.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, right. They realized 4 was an accident.
Well, like I say, to go in 5, you got to do a little digging if you like the toolbars and that type of stuff, you know, the certain look.
Right.
Same thing happened with 3 to 4 and 2 to 3. A lot of the plugins.
Well, because 5, they try to make look like Chrome. Just like Chrome, you know, you've got to go looking for how you want things to pop up and be there as constant, adding those as tabs.
Right.
Whereas within Foxfire, what I always liked about it, and that's why I told you I got 37 tabs, I can make groups.
Mm-hmm.
So I can sit there and say shut down all the tabs and then open up a whole nother group. And I've got some groups, like I say, has 37 tabs. I got some that have just 15 tabs. It's depending on what I'm doing for the day. I've got those earmarked the way I want them. And I like that flexibility within Firefox, being able to open those group of tabs just one swipe. Boom, it opens them all, and they're there for my use.
Right.
I found, I guess it's a bug, in Chrome. If I tell it to open a bunch of tabs...
It'd be a feature.
Let me have one. There we go. With a few tabs. When I tell it to open a bunch of tabs, the scroll bar in the bottom right corner doesn't work. I can't scroll up and down on pages that have scrolls. Until maybe Nick can see it. The scroll arrow is
yeah. This
beneath,
is radio.
Yeah.
It's beneath the grow bar, and I can't scroll unless I change the size, and then the scroll arrow jumps up where it's supposed to be.
Maybe you can still pull the.
Yeah, you can still pull the thing down. You just can't get to the arrow.
Right.
And I keep waiting for them to fix it, and it hasn't been fixed yet. Yeah.
Maybe we need to get another camera so now we can.
Well, yeah, cameras. We've got cameras in our computers, and we could do front face shots if we wanted to.
We could do a Google Plus Hangout during the show. It's crazy enough. I don't even have time to look at the IRC chat much anymore. So
hey,
it's not going to happen.
You never know.
You never know.
Hey,
let me read another news article here.
Go for it. We got the time.
Verizon, what's a road warrior looking for directions or a place to eat to do? Verizon ended its all-you-can-eat data plan this week, at least for new subscribers. While there is the possibility of shared data plans for families, this is probably of little consolation to businesses. Until recently, Verizon was offering new subscribers $30 for unlimited data for one handset, and between $20 to $80 for mobile broadband for tablets, netbooks, and mobile hotspots. However, most business travelers may be more interested in what the new tiered plans could be. The truth is that for many, this might be business as usual. Verizon maintains that the majority of users, 95% by some accounts, never even hit the 2-gig mark. But for others, it could result in a transition period where users are forced to determine whether the new 2-gig plan for $30 a month is enough or if upping to 5 gigs per month at $50 makes more sense. Heavy-duty users will also have the option of going for 10 gigs for $80 a month. This is really difficult to figure out. Handset smartphone users tend to rely heavily on their devices, and when out in the wild, as it were, these handsets are the lifelines to email, web, and other data transmissions. The carrier is looking to ditch the unlimited so-called all-you-can-eat plan in favor of what has been called buckets of megabytes. If you are mostly reading and sending email and occasionally viewing the web, then 2 gigabytes could be fine. But factor in VoIP, video, and other data, and suddenly it could be back to the old days when users watched their cell phone minutes very closely in the month as the month ticked away. The last thing a road warrior needs or wants to do is avoid pulling out the phone to get directions in fear of going over a data limit. Fortunately, as the reported 10 gig per at the reported 10 gig, $10 per gigabyte of overage, $10 per gigabyte of overage. It probably isn't a make-or-break deal, but for those who try to pinch pennies, those overages can add up somewhat quickly. Most email users probably won't knock you over the limit, but those who get large attachments should be more concerned. While even 100 emails a day isn't an issue, a few large files could eat up a lot of data, particularly if you're one of those people who's constantly sending out 40 or 50 cute pictures in an email. That's my entire month's limit, so don't send them to me. The same holds true for web usage, where visiting a couple dozen pages daily probably won't put you over the top. Sharing photos, using social media, and most importantly, video, can really add up fast. Those in the lower tier plans would be smart to think before snapping a photo and sending it from their smartphone. The other part of that, of course, is that when you do go to a website, if that web page has 50 different ads on it, all of which are video and audio and dancing pictures and stuff, there goes your usage. You just are going to have to start avoiding those websites. In the meanwhile, the best plan for business users on Verizon might be to hang on to their current plan. The new tiers are reportedly for new subscribers, so if you're already a Verizon user, happy with all the data you can eat, you might want to stay at that data buffet as long as you can. So our question to you, are you happy with Verizon's tiered plan? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
That's the same thing AT&T did when the iPad came out. They had that unlimited plan available for a couple of months. At least Verizon had it available for like 5 months. And they said last month that they were going to discontinue it, so there was at least some
warning.
Yeah. What's interesting is that at the lower plans, the 2-gig plan for $30 is $15 a gig, so you're getting $10 a gig after that. That's cheaper.
That's cheaper.
And then the 5-gig for $50 is $10, and then they have a 10-gig plan for $80, which is only $8 a gig. So it's the more you buy, the less it costs,
right.
which is typical. So the heavier users can go with the higher plans. But yeah, what I expect to see happen is what we did in the early days of texting. Parents are going to get a giant phone bill and complain about it the first couple of months and have to get bumped up to a higher plan.
Well, one of the things that can help that is if you make sure your kids keep their wireless on.
Yep.
So that most of the stuff when they're at least home or whatever goes through wireless.
Yeah.
The problem with that is it ruins your battery life, pulls it down much faster because you've got multiple radios on. And so it's going to be an adjustment. So far, the only place that's still doing unlimited is Sprint. Their president says he'll never, ever do tiered.
Well, I think it's unlimited 4G, but capped on 3G.
Oh, might be.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Linda did from Greece, New York. Welcome, Linda. How are you today?
Good. How are you guys?
Good. What's your question?
Okay. I heard you talking about Android phones.
Mm-hmm.
I just got one from Boost Mobile, part of the Sprint network. And it's $50 a month, unlimited everything, and then every 6 months it goes down $5. It has the Android 2.2 operating system. Now, it's a Samsung Galaxy Prevail. Now, am I losing anything from the Android market because it's a scaled-down version or not?
No, Android 2.2 is the latest one. It depends on what Samsung has put in the phone. That has nothing to do with the carrier and everything to do with the handset manufacturer. Android 2.2 is the latest
operating system
for phones. There is an Android 3.0, but that's for tablets, not for phones.
Uh-huh.
So you've got the latest one, and if you had, do you have access to the market at all?
Oh yeah.
Then you got everything.
Oh, I've got everything, but I just, you know, because I heard somebody say, I went to Verizon to ask them a few questions, and they said, Samsung Galaxy Prevail, I've never heard of it. And then somebody said to me, well, I've got, I don't remember what carrier they said. They said, I've got the Samsung Galaxy to Sprint, and I've got a two-year contract. And I just wondered, what was the difference between mine and theirs? That's what I was curious about.
Oh, the difference is every carrier, Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, has a set of handsets that they sell.
Uh-huh.
And others simply, many of them are completely exclusive. So
it's like the iPhone was only available on AT&T for a while.
Right. And, yep. And the Droid was only available through Verizon. That's starting to loosen up, but what happens is they make a deal. The idea being that, you know, we know our market, we know the people who use our service, we think they will be intrigued by this phone, so we want exclusive rights to it. So they make a deal with the kit with the manufacturer,
yeah,
to go exclusively with that. So Boost Mobile may be, in fact, the only company that has the Samsung Galaxy Prevail.
Yeah, it is.
That doesn't make it a bad phone. It just means that Boost Mobile got there first and made the deal.
Yeah. Well, I heard you say something about texting and this big, big bill, and I got it at Best Buy, and what I liked about it is it's $50 for the first 6 months. The next 6 months, you go down $5. After 18 months, it's $35 for unlimited. I think it's 300 minutes for unlimited text, web, and all that. And I thought to myself, well, you know, but I just wondered what you guys thought of it. That's all.
No, that's a good deal.
Great idea.
Yeah.
You did a great deal.
You did good, Linda.
Well done, Linda.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Take it easy.
Sure, have fun.
I wonder what the fine print is on that unlimited. Because, well, we've talked about this in the past. In fact, T-Mobile has a great commercial, Your Monthly Mugging. Unlimited can mean different things. You can get unlimited throughput or you can get unlimited speed.
Right.
And usually when we talk about caps, that's throughput. So if you download 2 gigabytes of data, you have to pay more. On some of the services, what happens if you reach your 2 gigabytes of data, you don't have to pay more, but it slows you down to ridiculous slow speeds. So you know, you can get throttled or you can get mugged. Yeah, it's your choice.
That sounds so weird, throttled.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Carl. Where are you calling from, Carl?
I'm in Pottstown, Pennsylvania.
Pottstown.
Yes, sir.
PA.
Pottstown, PA. And what can we do for you, Carl?
Well, I have a question. I'm just asking out of curiosity. When you go to a radio station with a listen live link, such as Jazz 90.1, that you could click on,
mm-hmm.
It generally brings up a player and you hear the audio.
Yep.
But it's my understanding that if you knew the exact URL of that listen live link, instead of clicking on the listen live button, you could type it in to the URL field, and if you're accurate, the player would come up the same way as if you clicked on the Listen Live button.
Absolutely true.
So my question is, if you wanted to know the exact URL of the Listen Live link, how would you go about finding that out if it's, you know, not obvious? Because usually it's just a button that says Listen Live. It doesn't give you the URL of that exact link.
Right.
You have to turn on your status bar or status tab at the bottom of your browser. So when you point to a link, it tells you the name of that link. You can also generally right-click on a link, and there's options to say open a new tab, open a new window, and one of them is typically copy link address. So for the Jazz 901 address, it's actually jazz901.org/assets/stream/jazz901stream.m3u. And sometimes the stream is... There's different types of streams, and Jazz 90.1 uses an MP3 stream, and that will play in iTunes as well as in your browser. Some radio stations use a flash stream. Some use a Windows Media Stream. So it's a different protocol for a lot of different stations. But generally, you can point to a link, and in your status bar, it will tell you the actual text of that link. Or you can right-click on the link and choose copy link address.
But in order for it to show up in the status bar, you have to turn something on, you said.
Depending on your browser, there's a show status bar, what is it in Chrome here? I think it's just always there in Chrome.
It's always in Chrome. You see it along the bottom when you actually point to the link. Now, that works on Jazz90.1's website. There are others where it does not work because what you're really opening up is a Flash player. So for that, you have to do some detective work, but...
you can usually do a show source on the page to see the source code of that page you're opening and then try to find that stream.
Yeah, you got
to
do some
And hunting. Some of them actually have a link down at the bottom that says, if you are having trouble seeing this stream, click here, and then you're right back to the... If you hover over it, you should see at the bottom the URL.
And once that page does open up and the player is playing, you can bookmark that page. And then jump right back to it there faster.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Thank you very much for the info.
I do that all the time. I have a product called Xia Lite, X-I-I-A Lite, X-A-I-I, Xia, I don't know, X-I-I-A Lite, I believe is what it is.
We can look it up and put a link on
exactly.
to that link.
And that's a player that's right in my phone. So while I still have unlimited data, I can pick up a station and just play it as I drive along. And what's nice about that is all I have to have is that URL to type into it one time and then save it. So for that, I used the stations that I listened to. It was fairly easy, luckily, for me to find that. But sometimes you have to do quite a bit of detective work to get to it.
There are several different streaming companies out. There's Live 365, they're Stream the World, so a lot of times you'll see different radio stations will end up under the same streaming company, especially Live 365, which is one of the oldest streaming companies for streaming radio shows.
Yep. Did that help?
Yeah, thank you very much for the information.
There you go.
And oftentimes when that you click the listen live and a little player window pops up. You can't see your bookmark bar or your address bar. Usually you can go to your view menu and turn them on again so you can see the address.
Right.
But we had trouble at one of our old radio stations where you couldn't bookmark that link because mm-hmm. there was an advertiser cookie as part of the URL. Because the advertisers and the radio station, they want to know who's listening so they can track it, they can count
you. Yeah, because then they can sit there and use it as a tool for, well, we're getting this many hits.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was a pain in the butt. Well, but I can see their logic behind it.
What was Definitely. That streaming thing you use?
Xia, X-I-I-A Lite. It's a an Android prop.
App?
Xia Lite, yeah.
All right, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Hey, all you Apple people, Apple will release Lion sometime next week, perhaps as soon as July 14th, according to reports. Citing unnamed sources, 9to5 Mac and Apple Insider said that Apple retail stores would be prepped next week, most likely for the launch of Mac OS 10, 10 point, OS X 10...
OS X.
Lion.
10.7 Lion.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that memory upgrades were to be installed on in-store displays, Macs to run... the new operating system, so it's going to take more memory than the old operating system, apparently, and they want you to upgrade that. Apple has said only that it will release Lion this month, but has not yet specified a date. Last week, Apple handed off a Gold Master, a term that describes a potential final build to developers. It has not updated the Gold Master build since then. Because developers are still filing bug reports on issues they have found with the Gold Master, Apple may issue a follow-up Gold Master before releasing the OS to the public. During the lead-up to the August 29th launch of Snow Leopard, for example, Apple delivered more than one Gold Master build to developers. If Apple hews to the timetable for Snow Leopard, it will announce Lion's availability date several days before the upgrade reaches the Mac App Store, the sole distribution channel for Mac OS 10, 10.7, Lion, which I have an issue with of my own. Analysts also believe that Apple will refresh the MacBook Air line either alongside the Lion launch or shortly thereafter. That line of lightweight notebooks was last tweaked in October of 2010 when Apple dropped prices, debuted a smaller 11-inch model, and replaced traditional hard drives with flash memory-based drives. According to reports, the refreshed MacBook Air notebooks will use flash memory chips that access data 1.5 times faster than the current model solid-state drive. While waiting for Lion, Mac owners can use the time to prepare their computers for the upcoming upgrade. So are you waiting for OS 10, 10.7 Lion? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
I got a question for you, too.
Well, but before we jump to that, the real frustrating part, especially for us dealers, is, as you mentioned, Lion's only available through the App Store, so dealers will not be able to sell it. In order to get to Lion, you must already have Snow Leopard. If you don't already have Snow Leopard, it's hard to buy because supplies dried up a month ago. So if your machine is still running 10.4 or 10.5, you... Almost
do they have to do a double buy? Do they have to buy Snow Leopard and then Lion?
If you don't already have Snow Leopard, you have to buy it in order to get Lion.
And then you got to pay another price.
For... Well, it's $30 for Snow Leopard and $30 for Lion, which is cheaper than a single copy of Windows or the previous price of OS X.
Yeah.
But supplies have dried up. All the distribution channels are empty. We've heard that some of the Apple stores still have Snow Leopard in stock. It's not unusual for Apple to discontinue a product when a new version comes out, but they usually wait until it actually comes out.
What happens if I have to replace my hard drive?
Yeah.
You should have already burned a copy of Lion from your original download.
Can you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And there is, from what we've heard with the developer version, we don't know about the retail version yet, with the developer version, you can burn a bootable DVD.
Oh, that makes it handy.
And if you don't...
You're hosed.
So what Apple is saying is you use your original
discs to reinstall your hard drive, upgrade to the latest Snow Leopard, and then you can download Lion again for free.
Yeah, there's good customer service. Well done, Apple!
They say there's plans coming for education and business customers who need multiple licenses.
Well, and that's a problem we have. I've been asking that forever. Yeah. We have Macs that we've purchased through the educational thing, and how are we supposed to upgrade? Well, we're going to get a single master disc. Okay, how am I going to upgrade?
Yeah, you put that as a netboot volume on your server and then upgrade each computer. Or you make copies of the disk. Or you put it on the flash drive.
Apple, I have to tell you, this is crappy customer service.
For individual users,
it simply is.
You can buy Lion once and then download it and install it on any number of your computers. That you use your iTunes account on. So that's a lot better than it used to be for individual users.
Yeah, well, yes and no. I mean, how many people actually have an iTunes account for multiple machines? Even businesses, I really don't want to be paying for your music. I don't want to be paying for your apps.
Yeah.
So how many places really do that, have one account that the entire business uses? It's just unrealistic.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, that's a...
I'm sorry. It's just unrealistic.
All right, both of you might know the answer to this question. You can get the cards for the iTunes store.
Yep.
Do they have gift cards in the store for the Android market?
Android gift cards. I don't know.
You know, because I was thinking about that, like my grandson now that he's got the same phone, you know, and as a birthday or Christmas gift... That's kind of neat, because you can get the iTunes ones. I've done that before, and I've gotten them before, and I liked it. You know, be able to download different music and from the iTunes
stuff. You can gift a specific app or in the Android store, can't you?
But it'd be nice if you could get a gift card.
I have not done that yet.
You know, I could sit there and, present to somebody and say, here you go. Here's $25.
Buy whatever you want, yeah.
Yeah, buy whatever app you want, and just like the iTunes store.
We sell a lot of iTunes cards that way. You know, parents and grandparents don't know what to get the kids. Just get them an iTunes card.
Well, Dan and Sam have done that for me for my birthday. You know, 62 years old. What do I need? You know,
We were watching Hollywood Treasures on one of the channels. It was the one guy's birthday. Hollywood Treasures is a show where they find props and costumes and whatnot from TV shows. They got the guy a Tweaky costume and Felix Silva for his birthday.
Wow. I would not have known Felix Silva was even still... Beep, beep, beep. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You've wasted an entire... hour of your life listening to this show. And hey, if you like, you can do it again, because we'll be back right after these important little announcements, and as soon as that's done, we'll be bringing you a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe, right here on the truly great. And if you aren't listening to the rest of this station, you're doing yourself a disservice. This is an excellent show. Weekends are pretty eclectic, but the rest of the week is jazz, jazz, jazz. And in fact, it's even in the name, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Funny how that works.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Speaking more of Google Plus, things come in waves, don't they? We have a wave of smartphone stories.
And wave was a disaster, and they canceled it.
Exactly right.
Before we go into that, we should mention to folks that you guys did look it up, and it appears that there is no gift card for the Android store, in case you folks were wondering.
Right,
and part of it seems to be the mechanism of the Android store is that individual developers put their stuff on the store, and you pay individual developers. So there's no real way they could do a gift card with Apple. Mm. All the money goes to Apple, and then Apple pays the developers, using Apple as the clearinghouse. And Apple takes their 30% as a means of getting in the store. But I think Google said they're only taking 10%. So there must be some sort of a clearinghouse through Google. But there's a lot of call on the net for people asking for Android gift cards.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be so cool, like I say, you know, for my grandson or Dan or Sam, you know, to be able to give them, you know, for their birthday or that. To be able to give them a $25 gift card to go get whatever apps you want. Because I know all of us right now are going crazy looking at all the different apps you can get and this and that. It'd be cool.
Yep. Well, after major privacy failures in its Buzz and Street View services, Google has hit the right notes with its deliberate, measured rollout of its new Google Plus social networking site, according to privacy experts. By making Google Plus available to a very limited set of initial testers, Google is showing that it's learned its lesson from the privacy fiasco that followed the sudden, widespread launch of its Twitter-like buzz service, which earned the company boos and lawsuits from end users and investigations and fines from government agencies for unilaterally and publicly disclosing previously hidden Gmail connections. The conservative approach to Google Plus's availability is allowing Google to gather valuable feedback and patch bugs, including privacy holes, before making the site available to a mass audience, when glitches would have been exponentially consequential and It is a welcome sign from a company that has also caught heat from privacy advocates and government watchdogs due to its now ended but years-long unintended capture of emails, passwords, and web traffic from unprotected Wi-Fi networks by the cars that make it Street View Maps photos. I cannot talk today. I think I washed my mouth out with soap. Can't do a thing with it. I think it is very smart of Google to restrict Plus to a limited field trial. They aren't even calling it a beta. Google made a misstep with the rollout of Buzz. They've already avoided that mistake with Plus with this limited release. And because it's so exclusive, tech-savvy individuals are fighting to get in. Just the type of folks you want as beta testers, said Sean Sullivan, an F-Secure security advisor. Now, clearly, there are some bugs to be fixed. I think Google will do so quickly, he added. They're rolling out a new version every, minute and a quarter. John Simpson, a consumer advocate at Consumer Watchdog, echoed the opinion. It's difficult to analyze Google Plus features because they do not have access to the project. But if they are sincerely attempting to solve issues before opening it up to the general public, that's a good thing. Perhaps Google executives have learned something from their past blunders, he said. Google Plus is clearly designed to give people better control over their privacy with respect to their family, coworkers, and friends. But there are other types of privacy that it simply can't provide. If you want a communications tool where the information you're sharing can't be read by Google or by governments or lawyers in Western countries, Google Plus isn't the service to use. Nobody can succeed in building a social network that can offer those kinds of privacy protections yet. So our question to you, are you still waiting for your invitation to Google Plus? Give us a call. Not that we have any. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
This is kind of a disturbing decision. Basically what happened is Google's driving around with a car, and they picked up open Wi-Fi.
Yep.
And Google is saying, well, it's just a radio broadcast. We, you know, it's no big deal.
Right.
The judge said, no, you are illegally wiretapping. It's not your, well, it is your fault that the other guy didn't protect his network. And it's very disturbing to hear
that. Well, that's
that.
So what, well, we've been you're saying that right along.
You're walking by someone's house and they're shouting out the window, it's illegal for you to listen. You can't wiretap them.
But that's totally different. I mean, and we've said this before, you're stealing. You can sit out in somebody's driveway, and that's the other scary part, too, though, is, you know, the folks aren't locking down their network. I could be sitting in their driveway downloading whatever,
yeah.
And they'd get blamed because it's coming across their network because yep. It's not locked down.
Yeah, it's an open radio network, and it's the network owner's decision to lock or not lock it.
And, I mean, I go around my neighborhood, and like I say, I can look at, you know, because of the phone now, I can see what networks are around, even with my little tablet. Go walking around. I did it just for the heck of it. And the number of networks that are still open that I could sit there. My little netbook and tap into it as I'm walking around, download something, they're going to get blamed.
The Wiretap Act was last addressed in 1986 to add CB radios and baby monitors.
Yeah.
So if you accidentally hear somebody's baby monitor, so you know your neighbor buys the same brand of baby monitor you do, and you're hearing their conversation, you're breaking the law.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Even though it's a public, unencrypted radio broadcast, it's your fault for accidentally hearing it.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a hard one.
That's the law.
That's the law.
Oh, yeah, I know. You know, it's not something you're doing intentionally.
Well, more importantly, if you get right off it again, how's anybody even going to know?
Exactly,
the other big thing. Did you have about the news about the student art project?
No.
There was this kid in New York City for a student art project, he says. He went to Apple stores in New York City and asked permission to take pictures with his camera. And they said, okay.
What? Of what? Inside the store?
Inside the store. Because most stores don't...
Of what, though? Of what?
Yeah, that's part of the questions. Of, you know, can he take pictures of people? It's a public place, but it's a private company. Most stores won't let you take pictures inside because they think you're casing the joint to rob them.
Mm-hmm.
But he must have explained it was a student art project or whatever.
Okay.
So he got permission to take pictures. So what he did, and this is where some of the legal gray area comes in, is he went on to the computers and set up their eyesight cameras to snap pictures of people.
Mm.
His art project was how we stare at computers. And so he was capturing pictures of people staring at the computers from the eyesight camera.
But he doesn't have the permission of those people.
But he got permission from Apple, and it's a public place. So it's all kind of iffy.
Yeah,
so this happened over two or three days.
But the thing of it is, though, is if you go in that store and there's not forewarning that you're on a camera... It's just like when you call the phone, they say that this might be recorded
Every store has that surveillance purposes.
But there still has to be a sign-up warning.
Yeah, you may not see it. So what happened?
You do that.
I do that, yeah.
Every store does that.
So what happens is, he was collecting these pictures. He says he collected about 1,000 pictures over 3 days. And in the Apple store, they erase and restore all their computers every night to stop whatever people had done on their computers. So every morning he went back and reinstalled this program on all the computers. And what he did is he amended the program so it started playing a slideshow back of people and to see how the reactions of seeing themselves. And my first thought when I read this story is, when's he going to get arrested?
Yeah.
So the next day...
And now you know.
The Secret Service busted his door down, confiscated all his computers, and arrested him.
For what?
Invasion of privacy.
Okay.
And I'm trying to figure out why the Secret Service would have done it. That's an FBI thing, isn't it?
You would certainly think so.
Secret Service is money or threats to the president.
Right.
So was the president in one of those stores?
It's possible.
Yeah.
Anything is possible.
Or a government official.
It was on Dvorak this morning too. All of the most of the blogs, Boing Boing is talking about it. This poor college student and his art project. His computers have been stolen by the Secret Service, and 2 days ago when the story broke was all he's going to get screwed for invading privacy.
Right.
So it's interesting as an art project if you have your camera out and ask permission of people that should be. okay, if they say okay. But what happens?
Evidently not.
Yeah, what happens when it's not?
Too bad, so sad.
That's an interesting. Well, of course, and that's why God made lawyers.
Yeah. So my question is, why is the Secret Service doing anything about it? So it was in all the major news stories, and then it's moving around. You know, so here's one from MSNBC: an Apple Store spy cam artist says the Secret Service busted him. Some of the other headlines are: student artist was harassed by Secret Service.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it all depends on how you look at it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. The reality is, there's been, how many times have we seen stuff in the paper about some employee at a school?
Yeah.
Turned all the cameras on all the Macs so he could watch students.
And there's
in their homes.
Oh, really? Oh, I did not hear that one.
Well, that was more than one. It was one of the big ones was a school in a Philadelphia suburb. The legal lawsuit was dismissed because it was school computers with school property, but the civil lawsuits are still going on. The one guy interviewed on TV on a different case said that he sees girls all the time using the camera to fix their hair, using it like a mirror. Yeah. And so when he turns on the capture a picture, they know to jump out of the way. But most laptops these days, and in fact most computers, have cameras built into them. And quite often, you know, the little green light's supposed to come on to tell you that the camera's working. But we've started seeing...
The privacy protector.
Yeah.
They're calling it
now. We've started seeing more and more people coming in with tape over their camera because they don't want that camera turned on. Without their knowledge.
Yep.
So that I can see what would happen if they put a lens cover on it. How many tech support calls would they get? I'm trying to do a video chat and the camera doesn't work. Have you opened the lens cover?
Yeah. Oops.
Yep. All right. Our next caller is Carl from Greece, New York. Welcome, Carl. What's your question?
Well, hi, guys. After years of listening to you talk about Ubuntu and Linux and all that kind of stuff, I decided to try it. I put it on my computer about a month ago.
Nice.
I haven't had a lot of time to play with it, but I've played with it a little bit. But I'm calling you this afternoon about a problem I've got right now. This morning when I tried to start my computer, it wouldn't boot up, and I got a message. It said, error, colon, no such partition. And then it said, grub rescue, and it had a little arrow pointing to the right. I don't know what I did or what it did or how I should get out of it. I thought I'd call the experts.
This is basically the same message you would get on a Windows machine when it says can't find an operating system, and that's essentially what this is saying. What it sounds like is there's something not right with your hard drive. Did you say this was an older machine?
No, it's actually less than a year old.
How old's the hard drive?
Same age.
Okay, sometimes.
Yeah, something happened to the partition table, and it can't find your boot disk.
Yeah, have you had an outage or anything else like that? It might have, popped it?
No.
There's a million things that could have caused it, but it's actually a physical problem on the drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not finding the data. The same thing would have happened in Windows or any other operating system. At this point, assuming that the drive is still good, really all you can do is reinstall Linux, just like you would have to reinstall Windows.
Is there a way to rebuild the boot record?
There is, but...
Not easy?
It's not really for beginners.
Well, I'm definitely a beginner.
I would...
Guess what you're going to be doing this afternoon.
Yeah, I would suggest that your best part really is to
As I recall, this was a month ago. I think I downloaded Ubuntu from somewhere, and I believe I had to install it on a disk, and then I put the disk in and installed it from the disk.
Mm-hmm. That is the usual way to do it.
Me. What you're saying is I probably ought to get that disk when I get back home and put it in and
or download it again, put it on a flash drive.
Is there a repair option?
Yeah, I was going to say, would it do a repair if he's putting it over itself? Might it repair itself?
It's been so long since I've installed from CD, but I believe that you can install. Depends on how you partitioned it, and it depends on what you've got, but there may be a rescue disk. In fact, somebody has a rescue CD now that I think about that.
I was going to say, give the option to put, like you can do Windows over Windows. It'll find the previous version and just repair it.
I guess. I've never had to do that.
I'm just taking a stab. I mean, I'm new to Ubuntu or haven't really played.
There's the Ubuntu Rescue Remix.
Well, and there's and here's
boot Ubuntu into rescue mode to fix system. Making a rescue disk. There you go. That's what Windows assumes. You've made a rescue disk before there's a problem.
Yeah, but there are rescue rescue CDs that you can download. There's also there is a way to do Linux grub rescue, and we'll put this link up on our site. You might want to read through that.
Okay.
And that should help.
The key thing is, do you have a computer that you can get to the internet to see this?
Well, right.
I'm sorry.
Do you have a computer that you can log on to and see the link that we're going to put up for you?
Yes, I actually can.
Oh, okay.
I have a laptop with me as well.
Okay, just double checking.
Yep.
Yep.
Hey, now will this have messed up my Windows side on the computer also?
It may be that Windows messed up the Linux side.
Who knows?
Okay. Well. Okay. So
that makes it harder if it's a dual boot system. That makes it much harder.
Mm-hmm.
Is this still relevant?
What's my first step then? I guess is what I'm trying to figure out.
It's kind of the same way.
Other than the link that you're going to give me.
Well.
Too hard, huh? Over the phone.
It's not that easy, particularly if it's a dual boot system, you got to find and you're using Grub, you got to find the right stage, and you got to find the right hard drive, and you got to find everything else. Your phone is ringing.
Very, I just realized.
Very
oops.
Very, very, very professional. All right.
By the way, I assume it partitioned itself because I actually did not go in. Whatever I read, it sounded like I didn't have to do that. And so I installed Ubuntu, and I think it took care of its own partitioning, whatever it had to do.
Well,
I didn't
probably
actually go in and partition
it
this.
Yeah, it probably did. But we'll post this and a couple of others that we find, but you. Luckily you have backups of everything, of course.
Yeah,
and we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz Overnight. It's all happening right here on your station. 7x24, 365. It's Jazz 90.1 and Jazz901.org.
Sorry, I'm listening to the music.
Okay.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. To go back to our last caller, there is Carl from Greece, not Carl from Pottstown, but Carl from Greece. Steve has put up a second thing that is the Linux Rescue CD, which you can download and burn and boot and follow the instructions, and that should help you recover the partition. There's really not going to be any guarantee because you're dual booting. That makes it a lot harder, but at least take a look through that and see what it gives you. All right, our next caller is Joe from Buffalo. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Well, you've hit upon some good points already. There's always the possibility of making a live CD and booting into a trial version of Linux. I recommend spending the extra time to download the DVD of Ubuntu and writing that to DVD minus R or plus R if your computer has that kind of drive. That way you have all the software on the one disk, so if there's something you're lacking, you can install it into the temporary installation. Like for me, it was Logic Volume Manager, stuff like video card support, whatever. But that's definitely one way to do it. You know, I must say it is kind of complicated, but it's not really, really involved to get the boot to work again. It's not like you have to be a real programmer or anything. But you're right. It's not exactly for the faint of heart just yet.
Yeah, a lot of times when you say go to the command line, people go, what?
The who, where, and
yeah. Yeah, come on, what?
Exactly. You're right. You're right, Joe. It's not impossible, but it's finicky, and it's a little touchy. So I would rather send him to the right website than explain it step by step rather than say, oh, go into Grub and go into Stage 1 and find out which hard drive you're using. I mean, you know, that's silly.
Especially if you write something down incorrectly, then we're kind of on the hook for one of the instructions got out of order.
Yeah, we run into that all the time. People want answers over the phone, and it's very hard to talk people through stuff on the phone, and they skip step three, and then suddenly their hard drive is empty. Well, you shouldn't have skipped step three. I didn't understand what it meant, so I skipped it.
Yeah, we see that all the time.
Yeah.
The recovery tango,
RM minus R.
Yeah, right.
Oops.
Oh, don't laugh. I had a friend of mine. This is back in the Xenix 286 days. He always ran his root. He did RM-RF asterisk. He thought he was in a subdirectory, and he was doing it as root. He calls me over and says, what does this mean, /bin/RM text busy? Carl, that means you're now going to go grab your install disks again.
We had somebody do that in our store, and he must have had verbose mode turned on, because it told him every file it was deleting as it was deleting it. I see him sitting there, and this procedure shouldn't take more than a minute. Well, it's going through something here. Deleting, 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 deleting. No, you missed the slash.
Oops.
We actually had that happen in college with our VAX system. One of the administrators accidentally deleted the system. He was logged into the privileged account and deleted the operating system. So he had to call the guys from DEC in, who drove in from Boston, to load a tape on the machine. And they load the tape, hit go, and say, anything to do in North Tri-Life for the next 3 hours?
Yeah, right.
Another good option for trying both Windows and Ubuntu at the same time is WUBI, W-U-B-I. That, in essence, installs Ubuntu into your Windows partition.
Right, that and it actually looks like a file to Windows. So there's no point at which Linux touches your Windows system. It just looks like a file. You double-click on it, and suddenly you're in Linux.
Yeah, and what you were saying before about the cameras on the smartphones?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I heard a couple of weeks ago, I heard about that Apple was either planning or actually had released a version of iOS whereby if it received a certain sequence of infrared pulses, it would actually disable the camera. Its original intent was people going to things like concerts with smartphones, holding up their smartphone, and, you know, basically stealing the artist's work and going, you know, publishing that. I thought that was a bit invasive.
Concert promoters and, movie people at the movies, there have been talk about movie theaters putting in jammers. So you can't use your cell phones inside a theater or at a concert. There's a technology that was demonstrated for smartphones that a concert promoter or musical theater, whatever, can put something on the stage and beam it toward the audience, and it's invisible. It's invisible to people, but it will jam your smartphone cameras.
Wow.
That's one thing I laughed at the Jazz Fest while I was going up and emceeing a few acts. One of the things that we had to say was, please, no pictures or videos.
Yep.
I no sooner go to head off the stage and the act is coming on and you see all these cameras. I'm seeing all these flashes. It's like, okay, for what that was worth.
It was a patent filing that hit the press a couple of weeks ago about an iPhone that would have this system in it. So, of course, someone commenting on the article, first thing you do is put an IR filter over your camera. So IR can't get into your camera. In fact, the other way around, a lot of people use put an IR plus, filter on it to see an IR. It'd be easy to put an IR minus filter so that IR doesn't get in.
Yeah, true. Right.
Oh my goodness, it sounds like the same leapfrogging going on with, viruses.
That's the way it works.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. Around and around
digital
we go.
Content management.
Yeah. I think there used to be cell phone jammers in, like, movie theaters until someone tried to dial 911 and sued because they couldn't get an emergency call out.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. There are a lot of ways around a crashed crashed Linux disk, but none of them are ridiculously easy. And more importantly, when you're dual booting, it can conceivably be a unique situation. So you got to be careful.
Did you ever meet Geohot when he was at RIT?
I may have.
What's his name? Yeah, George Holtz, who was one of the very first iPhone unlockers. He figured out a hardware hack on re-soldering connections inside the iPhone to unlock it from AT&T. He ended up going to RIT for school, and now he's working for Facebook. I don't think he's even graduated RIT yet.
A lot of people, you know, when you get the kind of money that some of these kids are being offered, and they don't care that you have no education as such, then, you know, what the hell? They just want what they want out of you, and they'll pay for it. So you end up from your point of view to the good for that.
Yeah. Yeah, leave school because you got a job. I think most of us here did that, didn't we? Except you went to seminary.
I did.
So you leave school to be a priest. No, that doesn't work.
That's not going to work. I did time in the seminary. I mean, I spent time in the seminary. Hey, if you subscribe to the theory that most potential iPhone buyers on Verizon have held out on purchasing a device till the new model launches this fall, then this statistic should surprise you. 32% of all current iPhone 4 users in the U.S. are on the Verizon network. Yep, that's right. Research firm Localistics. Some research firm released data Thursday that shows the device has shown steady growth since its launch on the Verizon network in February. The iPhone 4 started out on the right foot rather quickly, grabbing about 20% of the market early on, but its real growth has been over the summer. Why is that? One could justifiably assume that those on the fence were ensuring they'd have unlimited data as the company does away with those plans beginning this week. Another reason could be a new rash of folks coming out of contract with AT&T. Remember, the iPhone used to launch in the June timeframe, so those folks who sprung for the 3GS back in 2009 would be just coming out of their contract now and be ready to switch. If Localytics is right, this is nothing but good news for Apple. This likely means that we really haven't seen the true effect of Verizon on the iPhone fortunes. We'll see what the iPhone 5 launch does to it all. Are you a Verizon iPhone user? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
T-Mobile has also officially said they have several million iPhones, now that Apple is officially selling an unlocked iPhone.
Right.
All right, here's another good question for you guys. We've always talked about how, you know, here, when it comes to Internet, we're third world.
Yes, we are.
Because of that. And the point I'm bringing up is, where do we stand as far as phones? Now, are we paying a lot more, again, you know, say, than third world countries?
We pay a lot more money for a lot.
The data plans and everything else.
Yeah,
are they cheaper, again, third world countries?
One of the big issues is the contract prices. In Europe, there are virtually no contracts. So you pay $600 or $700 for your phone, and you can use it on any carrier you want. Here in America, the phones are still listed at $600 or $700. In fact, the unlocked iPhone is like $699. But when you commit to a 2-year contract, you get it for $100 or $200. So they don't have those discounts in Europe like they do here in America.
Well,
they're
dropping them here too. I believe Verizon definitely is dropping.
We're seeing the discounts.
Dropping what?
The discount.
Next
phone you buy is going to be full price.
It's getting less and less. Instead of like a 90% discount, maybe it's only going to be a 50% discount.
Mm.
Because it used to be they know they're going to get you for $2,000 over the next 2 years. You know, $100 a month is a typical cell phone bill.
But again, going
for
back
a single
to,
person.
Like on third world countries, so say like on the amount of data I can download, you know, the 2 gig plans and the 5 gig and the 10 gig.
They don't have that, and they also have much, much faster connectivity than we have.
They've got faster than 4G.
Well, they've got 4G. They've had it forever.
Okay. Just 4G is faster than the 3G connection.
Yeah.
What about signal strength?
Well, that depends on how many towers you can put up.
Right. And
the tower regulations here in America are ridiculous. They've said one of the problems that New York and San Francisco have such bad cell phone service is that it takes 5 years or more to get a tower approved. So, you know, cell phones have gotten popular in the last 5 years, especially San Francisco being such a high-tech area, having terrible cell phone service.
Well, that's where AT&T, you know, really tried to jump on it because Verizon, you know, had that guy going around, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Going all over the place. And AT&T was getting such
bad for him. He's not in the commercial anymore.
Yeah, I know.
He had a good run, though. He made a decent living out of it. Of course, when I see guys like that, you know, like Flo on the Progressive commercial,
oh, she is
my
good.
First thought is, a working actor gets a long-term gig. That's great.
She is good, though.
You can usually tell the fewer lines they get over the years,
when the Verizon guy was not saying anymore. Yeah.
And the Gecko seems to have lost his gig too. The last series of commercials.
Well, I haven't seen a new Gecko commercial in a while, but they do the weirdest commercials anyway.
I love the one, Have You Been Living Under a Rock?
Have You Been Living Under a Rock? That guy is making a decent living. Yeah. I look at him and think, there's a guy who's got a gig for a while. He's got the voice and he's got the look.
All right, but the best one that I think is out there is Ameritrade and the Little Kid.
The little baby?
Yes.
Oh, a lot of people hate those because it's so freaky.
It is freaky, but that guy, the voice of the baby's got a gig.
I like
for
the
a
one where he
too.
Hit the iPad in the crib and he's down for he's down for a timeout and but I still got my iPad. And then mom comes by and picks up the tablet. Hey, what's going on?
Or when he's in the locker room with the guy playing golf and he goes, "It was off the path, Shankosaurus."
Yeah, right.
I just love it. And then he's doing another one, and then this little baby starts to go, it gets into a loud voice.
Yep, and the Scott Trade guy, who's the flashy trader guy, and he's another guy who's got a job. See, I don't care about the commercials; I care about the actors that are actually working for a living.
Some of that I get annoyed by the TD Ameritrade that's done by the guy from Law and Order.
Oh right,
I don't believe the commercial at all because that's the guy from Law and Order.
Right.
I mean, and that poor actor, I don't remember his name offhand, but he probably can't get another job because he's been the guy from Law & Order forever.
Well, and that's a real problem when people get typecast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's a real problem. What are you going to do, you know?
Yeah. Some of them can break it, you know. Some of them go...
We've been joking, Jason Momoa from Stargate is the new Conan.
Right.
And he's also in Game of Thrones.
I don't have that channel.
Well, so there's naked pictures of him running all over the internet because there's apparently a lot of nudity in Game of Thrones on HBO, and so all the girls in our science fiction group are all excited about it.
I could not get into that series of books. I've started the Game of Thrones probably four or five times over the years. I get maybe halfway through the first book, I got halfway through the second book. It just doesn't hold my interest. Now, on the other hand, The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan, I've been inhaling those books. I don't know what the difference is, why one really works for me and the other one doesn't. I don't know.
Well, apparently Torchwood started this week on Stars. So if anybody has Stars and wants to make us a copy... So
that would be illegal, so don't do it, but give us a call.
If you let us borrow your copy...
No, that's illegal as well.
If you invite us over to watch it, there we go.
If there's fewer than 10 of us.
If there's fewer than 10 of us, yeah. Right. So we got to wait till the end of the season to like come out on DVD. Actually, let me look on iTunes. A lot of times...
Yeah, it may well be that it's on iTunes.
Yeah, you can typically with TV shows on Amazon's video streaming. You know, the day after it airs, you can rent it or download it legally. But there's a big article on TV this week on the new guys. It's still Gwen and Jack, and then they brought in three American guys.
Right, Mackie Pfeiffer.
Pfeiffer from Lie to Me.
Right,
and
I don't know the other
two other guys.
Are.
Yeah,
so but yeah.
All these channels that you can't get. And I'm already paying $120 a month for the damn cable. Darn cable. Sorry.
Darn stinking cable.
Darn stinking cable. And that's what I want to see with TV shows. I want to buy a TV show.
And why are you on the button?
I don't want to buy a cable.
For you last week, you're not on the button for him this week.
Darn is okay.
Yeah, you never mind. You missed it. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running up to today computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites on Member Supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. You know, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Peter did from Penfield, New York. Welcome, hey. Peter. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Wonderful summer afternoon to you.
And the same to you.
I wanted to comment on the Pennsylvania guys' question about the recording or gathering of URLs for bookmarking radio stations.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was multitasking, so I was probably doing two jobs poorly. I'm not sure if you mentioned this. But one thing that I have found is HTTP Fox in Firefox, an add-on, is really useful to see the list of URLs that are loading and then copy and try
nice.
To pop that into something, a tuner, to see if that's the one that does play the site. And then, like you're saying, the source code, I found that the HTTP Fox doesn't work as uniformly as it used to a few years ago, or at least a year ago, and so I might have to dive into source code myself going in the future, maybe. But,
yeah, but that's a nice start anyway.
Yeah, HTTP Fox is something. That's a neat little add-on. And the other thing I wanted to mention is regarding the Google Plus user license agreement, if that's the phrasing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, I remember when Gmail first was released, and honestly, my eyes were shocked, and I think I read it correctly, that it was the same thing for Gmail about the contents of the mail messages in the Gmail
yep.
service. And I thought, wow, is that amazing? I mean, if you're writing a document back and forth to somebody, a prospectus, who knows what, Gmail saying that that's their property.
Yeah, but I believe they've changed that now.
Yeah, I did look in the last 6 months or so, and I did see that it's not there. But, I mean, that was enough to turn me off forever on it, to be honest with you.
Yep. And there's also, by the way, now that you've said that about HTTP Fox,
mm-hmm.
there's also a program called Firebug.
Okay.
An extension called Firebug that lets you see all of the various elements of your page. It's designed for developers, but what it lets you do is, once you bring it up, you can point to a page, a piece of the page, and it'll tell you what's going on in that page, so you'd be able to easily focus in on where in the source code that URL is.
That's outstanding. I've heard of it, but I have not used it. I'll try to load that in.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Along the same concerns with Google and omniscience and all this, do you, security concerns and all that, is Android and Chrome, I mean, I've kind of avoided that because of that Gmail thing that I read years ago
right.
and their licensing. What are your thoughts on Chrome and Android?
Well, I like both. I am an Android fan. I like my phone. I have my work owns a Motorola Zoom. I just have it in my possession.
I keep wanting to say Zune, the Motorola Zune, because that was the name that was around for so long that
right,
no one ever bought.
Right, from
the Microsoft
Zune,
yeah.
Now, this is XOOM, and it's pronounced Zoom, because Xoom wouldn't work. And I can't do the clicky sound.
X-Oom. It's X-Oom.
Yeah, it might be X-Oom. Oom. But I love them both. I really like my Android phone. The reality is that as it stands these days, you don't have a lot of privacy anywhere. If you want privacy, stay off the internet. You know, I'm sorry, but that's the reality.
Yeah.
Facebook owns your data. MySpace owns your data. Google owns your data.
That was pretty typical in the early days. If you upload your data to a site, well, of course that site's going to do what they want with the data because you uploaded it.
Uh-huh.
And that was sort of the assumption back then.
Maybe I'm kidding myself with Yahoo Mail. I forget that agreement years ago in the 90s when I read that. So.
But it doesn't matter. It almost doesn't matter if it's in the agreement or not. The email provider can read any of your messages they want to because it's going through their server.
Yeah, but
it might be illegal, but they still can.
As far as I'm saying, it's their property or they own it. I mean, that truly frightens me. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd have to stop and reread all of those, but I know they've. Particularly,
well,
Google has changed their terms of service 8 or 10 times over the years.
I know some of it, especially dealing with the photo sharing sites, where
mm-hmm.
you have to give them permission to redistribute your photo so that other people can see it. So that means if other people can see it, anyone can see it.
Okay.
That can see it, which is kind of a roundabout argument there.
Sure.
But you are giving implicit permission by uploading a photo to Google Photos that you want people to see it.
Okay.
And attaching a license to it, you know, Creative Commons license are big, you know, attribution, non-commercial, you know, public, you know, whatever you want to put on the bottom of it. The legality of that hasn't quite been tested completely yet. But when you upload a photo, you may want to add those copyrights to it yourself, embedded in the photo. So if your photo shows up somewhere else, you can at least claim some sort of a copyright issue if someone uses it without your permission.
And put like embed a superimpose some text on the photo.
Yeah, watermark or
something at the bottom.
At the bottom of the photo.
At the bottom or in as embedded part of, in the photo itself.
Yeah, as part of the photo, so it's visible on the photo rather than just in the metadata.
Like you say, a watermark you can do very easily down at the bottom.
Yep.
Well, great. When I single task, sometimes I download the archive and play it when I can have some undivided attention, which I'll do on some of the issues at the top of the hour. And I got to tell you, the speed of your download is incredible for those files. It's
thank
amazing.
You.
So good.
Thank you very much.
That server's on internet too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So it's crossing the internet one, internet two boundary.
Yeah, right. But it's pretty fast, particularly on a weekend.
Well, great. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right,
take
thanks.
It easy.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to go back and reread those.
Yeah, some
well,
of
that's and that's the whole thing. No one ever.
You
got
to be a lawyer though to sometimes interpret.
Well, that's the problem with them.
You know, because I mean, they can say something, but then it's like, all right, how do you interpret it, Steve? Versus how do you interpret it, Nick? You know, I mean, it can be.
We had a problem this week with misinterpretation. A customer said, "Call me if you can come," and when I didn't call him, he was mad.
Oh, I ran into.
I couldn't
into that.
Come, so I didn't call you.
Right. What they really mean is call me one way or the other, but they don't say, say that. Well, I actually had a question for the Googlers out there, and none of them have answered me yet. But I only sent it to them yesterday, late last night. Google Plus and Huddle and all of those pieces of the puzzle have apps available on the Android phone or the Android tablet. And my question is, do they log in HTTP or HTTPS? Because that'll tell me where I can use those safely.
Oh, good point.
And I don't know, and none of them have answered me yet, and I'm sure they will, but they haven't yet.
Mm. No.
Now, see, that's kind of a contradiction, too. You want to do a public chat with private security. So
well,
it's a
I
private
want to log
chat.
In privately. Yeah. I want my login to be secure.
Yeah.
Right.
And then whatever else I do, if I decide to do it publicly or not, is my business, but I want to be able to log in securely.
Yeah. You initially have set up some guidelines, but then what you do from there on, again,
well, that
still
was
some
one
control.
That was one of the big bugs early in most of the, especially webmail services, where and even on banks. I had this problem with Canandaigua National locally for a long time. The login is secure, but then it goes unsecure. But the problem is the page you're logging in with is unsecure. It's not until you click the login button that it turns on encryption. But by then it's too late. Anyone could have already have seen that page.
Right.
So that's a big tip is when you're logging into a bank or your webmail or anything like that, you have to start typing https://whatever. We've gotten out of the habit of typing the HTTPs and even the Ws. But if you're going to a secure website where you're going to log into private information or give your credit card number to buy something, you need to manually type the HTTPS yourself.
Yep. I'll tell you what, I rarely go to an HTTP site anymore, unless it's something like, I don't care, that I'm not logging in, it's Wikipedia.
There's Firefox.
I don't really care.
There's Firefox and Chrome plugins. I think there's one for Safari, too, for HTTPS all the time.
That could be useful.
The problem is some websites don't support that. So the front page cannot be loaded encryptedly, but once you get to the a private page inside, it can. In fact, there's a big problem with Facebook that the FireSheet bug, the FireSheet program found the bug in Facebook that by the way you're logging into Facebook, your login credentials are available, to the air, and anyone can see them and get to them. Mm-hmm. So Firefox instituted encrypted logins. But a lot of the Firefox games and added features, the Facebook games and added features in Facebook will not work with encryption. So you get a pop-up message comes up and says you have to turn your encryption off, and you do, and then you forget to turn it back on, and now you're unencrypted again. So you go to a coffee shop and log into Facebook, and someone sitting at the next table can see your credentials, log in as you, and post whatever they want in your name.
Yep. Oh, before we go too far, I do want to mention one study that was done. We got about a minute. You know the questions about phone cancer with
cell phone? Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, the latest study says no, it's not going to happen. In fact, they bombarded mice with like 7 zillion times the amount of radiation
that you get off a phone.
It did have one effect. It cured their Alzheimer's.
Get out.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So
keep using your phone?
There's a whole new... Yeah, exactly. Don't stop using your phone. In fact, use it more. But that was the other thing that came out this week, and I was kind of amused by that. Now, obviously, that's one study, and who knows what, who knows.
Well, it's like...
But it's certainly a field that they'll be talking more about as time goes on.
Well, that's like we've said before. You know, you can sit there, and just like some of the other studies that you were saying, this did research on this and that. Again, it's usually those companies getting stuff that, sways it towards their way to prove their point.
Right.
And it's like any other data. You can manipulate it any which way you want, but who knows?
Yeah, you never know. You never know. All right, folks. That music tells me you have wasted 2 hours of your life listening to us. I don't know what you were thinking. You could have been, mowing the lawn or whatever it is that it happens to be. But instead, is this something you want on the air?
Put on demand on the Starz website, but it only works if you're a Comcast subscriber or a Dish subscriber. Okay. So you can't just buy the TV show online. You have to subscribe to the whole network.
Right, exactly. All right, but we're done for another week. Thank you so much for listening. George is coming in momentarily, and he'll be doing some great German music. Linda will keep him under. I'm bringing my whip in for you, Linda, because you're going to need it at some point. I have lost complete track of how much time we have left. So I'll just say for Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, we are done, and we are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Here are the club calendar highlights for Saturday, July 9th.